start with the same blank page. Different ink in our veins. A quiet score at 23.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So I want you to picture two 23-year-olds entering the labor market today.
Okay.
They have the same degree, the same ambition, and, you know, they're starting from roughly the exact same place in life. But fast forward 4 years, right? One is just climbing the ladder rapidly, securing this highly prestigious position, while the other is, well, they're struggling in a mismatched lower tier job.
Right, which happens all the time.
Exactly. And we naturally look at their networks, right? Or maybe the wealth of their parents, or just plain luck to explain that divergence. We also hear constantly that cognitive ability, like how smart you are, is a massive predictor
here. Oh, absolutely. It's huge.
But, you know, when we look under the hood of that connection, a much more profound question emerges for you as you navigate your career. Are those differing outcomes dictated by the environments they navigated? Or is the trajectory of their socioeconomic status fundamentally written into their DNA?
Yeah, it's a heavy question.
It really is. I mean, think of navigating your early career like playing an incredibly complex open world video game. You might spend years believing your final score depends entirely on, like, the environments you explore and the power-ups you collect along the way.
Right, the things you pick up.
Yeah. But what if the hidden algorithm dictating your ultimate success is really just the base stats your character was assigned at the very beginning? I mean, how could this shift our entire paradigm of upward mobility?
Well, the biological reality of how our minds interact with the economy, it presents a picture that really challenges a lot of those deeply held assumptions about human potential.
Yeah, because we love a good narrative, right?
Exactly. We are so drawn to the narrative that the right mentor or the right neighborhood is the ultimate deciding factor in someone's career. But when we start analyzing the longitudinal data, the intersection of our genetics and our socioeconomic trajectory tells a wildly different story about how those outcomes are actually generated.
Which brings us to the research we're digging into today. Today, we celebrate the work of Petr J. Kajonius from the Department of Psychology at Lund University.
Yes.
And his team has really advanced our understanding of the psychological and genetic mechanisms behind socioeconomic status. They utilize data from the German Twin Life Project. And this research was published in the journal Scientific Reports in February of 2026.
And, you know, the reason this specific puzzle required solving right now really comes down to a persistent gap in the social sciences.
What kind of gap?
Well, cognitive ability has long been established as the strongest single predictor of socioeconomic status. When you look at massive meta-analyses across, like, decades of data,
yeah,
you consistently see an effect size of around R equals 0.50.
So a 0.50 between a person's intelligence quotient and their future SES, that's a massive correlation.
It's huge. The phenotypic link, you know, the observable connection in the real world is heavily, heavily documented.
Yeah.
But the mystery we are still unraveling is the mechanism beneath it. We really need to know how much of this relationship is driven by a person's unique experiences versus their raw genetic makeup.
And researchers have tried to tackle this before, right? I mean, usually by looking at children, which seems like the logical starting point.
Yeah, they have.
Like, there was a major UK study analyzing thousands of unrelated children, and they found this near-perfect genetic overlap between the socioeconomic status of a family and the child's cognitive ability at ages 7 and 12.
Right, but the thing is, studying children introduces incredible statistical noise.
Really? How so?
Well, think about it. Their environments change rapidly, their brains are undergoing massive developmental leaps, and there are countless unmodeled environmental effects that just confound the data.
Oh, sure.
So to truly understand the genetic mechanism, you have to look at adulthood. Which brings us to this really counterintuitive phenomenon in behavioral genetics.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
The heritability of IQ, meaning the proportion of individual differences in intelligence attributed to genes, it actually rises as you age.
Wait, it goes up.
Yeah. It starts as low as 20% in early childhood and climbs to a staggering 80% in late adulthood.
Wow.
Furthermore, a recent Norwegian twin study demonstrated that socioeconomic status itself is partly genetic. They found a genetic component of 34% to 47% for various socioeconomic measures.
Okay, I have to push back on that 80% figure for a moment.
Sure, go ahead.
An 80% heritability for IQ in adulthood sounds overwhelmingly deterministic to me. I mean, it frames intelligence as this fixed trait assigned at birth that just locks you into a destiny.
I get why it sounds that way.
Right. Shouldn't the compounding effect of your environment matter more the longer you live, not less? Like, how do genes continually increase their influence over decades?
That reaction gets right to the heart of a major misconception about genetics. We tend to visualize genes as a static blueprint, you know, like it's read once during development and then just filed away.
Yeah, exactly.
But biological reality operates dynamically. The mechanism driving this increase is a continual activation of individual genes and an increasing person-environment fit throughout a person's life.
Okay, so meaning the genes are actively shaping the environment the person chooses to inhabit rather than just passively responding to whatever happens to them.
Yes, exactly. Think about a child with a slight genetic predisposition for, say, higher fluid intelligence. That biological nudge causes them to actively seek out more complex books or engage in more challenging debates.
Or gravitate toward cognitively demanding hobbies.
Right. They are inadvertently constructing a highly stimulating environment around themselves. And over years and decades, those micro choices compound, kind of like interest in a bank account.
That makes a lot of sense.
So by the time they reach late adulthood, that initial genetic predisposition has been magnified by a lifetime of self-selected environmental enrichment. The genes didn't just build a brain, they guided the person toward the environments that maximize the brain's potential.
Wow. But to isolate that genetic signal from the environmental noise, you can't just survey a random sample of regular families, right?
No, definitely not.
You need a structural control group that allows you to mathematically separate biology from upbringing.
You need twins.
Ah, twins, of course.
Yeah, so the methodology of this study relies on the German Twin Life Longitudinal Panel data. This is a highly robust, representative sample of emerging adults in Germany.
Okay.
The researchers tracked individuals across a really crucial transitional period. They surveyed them first at age 23, and then again 4 years later at age 27.
And emerging adulthood is basically the ultimate proving ground for this metric, isn't it? I mean, that window from 23 to 27 is when most people step out of higher education and attempt to secure their very first real foothold in the labor market.
Exactly. It's a critical window. So the sample filtered for this age range gave them 228 identical twin pairs. So monozygotic twins sharing 100% of their segregating DNA and 212 fraternal same-sex twin pairs.
And those fraternal ones share about 50% of their DNA.
Right. They're dizygotic twins sharing on average 50%.
Yeah.
And the delta between that 100% and 50% variance is the mathematical lever researchers pull to isolate the genetic influence.
Okay, let's look at the actual metrics used to feed that mathematical lever. Measuring intelligence and career success requires some pretty heavy standardization to be useful in a longitudinal model like this.
It does. So at age 23, cognitive ability was measured using Cattell's Fluid Cognitive Ability Test.
What exactly is that?
It's a rigorous 56-item computer-based assessment. It focuses on figural reasoning and matrix problem solving. So it tests raw processing power and fluid intelligence rather than just memorized knowledge.
Got it. And then at age 27?
4 years later, socioeconomic status was quantified across four metrics. For education, they used standard frameworks, including the ISCED and the Kasman classifications. And for occupation, they measured both occupational prestige and the individual socioeconomic labor market position.
Right. And to determine the gene versus environment split across that four-year gap, the researchers applied the classic twin design alongside a bivariate longitudinal Kolesky model.
Yes.
I want to make sure the mechanics of this are crystal clear for you listening.
Okay, well, the classic twin design takes the observable differences between individuals and decomposes them into three latent factors.
The ACE model, right?
Yep. First is A for additive genetics. Yep. Second is C for common family environment, capturing everything the twins shared growing up, like the parents' income, the physical home, the neighborhood.
Okay.
And third is E for unique environment, encompassing all the experiences unique to one twin and not the other.
So to visualize this mathematically for you, imagine those twins as two cars on a track. Identical twins have the exact same engine, their genes, and they start at the exact same garage, their shared family environment.
I like that analogy.
Thanks. And fraternal twins, they have different engines, but still start at that same garage. So by tracking their progress and comparing their final positions on the track, which is their SES at age 27, we can use the varying finish lines between the identical and fraternal pairs to mathematically extract the raw power of the engine from the quality of the shared garage.
Exactly. And the bivariate longitudinal Kolesky model takes that variance extraction and maps it across time.
So it's looking at the movement.
Right. It doesn't just look at IQ and SES in isolation. It calculates how the variance in the first trait flows into the variance of the second trait.
So it essentially asks, of the total correlation between your intelligence at 23 and your success at 27, what percentage of that overlapping space is driven purely by the genetic engines we just isolated?
You nailed it.
Okay, let's reveal what those models actually produced when the data was processed. I'm excited for this part.
Prepare yourself. The baseline heritability was extremely high. At age 23, the heritability of cognitive ability was approximately 75%.
Wow, 75%.
Yeah, perfectly aligning with the literature on adult intelligence. And by age 27, the socioeconomic outcomes were also highly heritable. Genetic factors explain between 49 and 66% of the variance in educational outcomes.
And for occupation?
For occupational outcomes, the genetic influence ranged from 32 to 71%.
Man, realizing that over half the variance in the prestige of your job traces back to your genetic variance is a heavy concept on its own.
It is.
But the primary focus of this paper is the longitudinal overlap between those two data points, right?
Yes. When the Kolesky models calculated the flow of variance, they revealed that genetic factors explain between 69 and 98% of the longitudinal association between IQ and SES.
Wait, up to 98%?
Yeah. For occupational socioeconomic status specifically, the genetic overlap hit that 98% mark. The genetic correlations far exceeded the environmental correlations.
That's incredible.
It means the reason smart 23-year-olds tend to become successful 27-year-olds is overwhelmingly because the genes driving their fluid intelligence are the exact same genes driving their career trajectory.
And looking at the environmental data in these models, there is a finding that completely defies common sense to me.
Well, the C factor.
Yes, the C factor, the common family environment representing the shared childhood home and parental resources. It played a shockingly small role. Like, in many of the best-fitting models, the C factor dropped out entirely, leaving only genetics and the unique environment.
Yep.
How is it possible that the random, unshared life experiences you have matter more to your ultimate success than the socioeconomic status of the house you grew up in?
Well, modern behavioral genetics consistently surfaces this phenomenon, and it routinely shocks people. Once you control for the genetics that siblings share, the remaining differences in their adult outcomes are driven almost entirely by E, the unique environment.
So not the big stuff like the neighborhood.
Exactly. We tend to think of the environment as massive systemic structures, but the data suggests environmental influence is actually composed of chaotic, idiosyncratic life events.
Like what?
It's a chance conversation with a mentor who alters your career path. It is reading a specific book that triggers a new ambition. Or it could even be catching a severe flu on the day of a critical university entrance exam.
Or just simple measurement errors in the data itself.
Right, that too. The shared background, the fact that both twins had the same parents and ate at the same dinner table. It explains a surprisingly negligible amount of why their IQ relates to their adult SES.
So if the bridge between fluid intelligence and career prestige is paved almost entirely with genetics rather than shared childhood environments, we really have to look at the biological mechanics here.
We do.
Like, how do genes actually execute this in the real world?
The paper frames this through pleiotropy. That's the phenomenon where one genetic factor influences multiple, seemingly unrelated phenotypic traits. And the researchers outlined two distinct pathways for how pleiotropy creates the IQ-SES link.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is direct or biological pleiotropy.
Meaning the genes are basically multitasking on a biological level.
Yes. The same genetic architecture is simultaneously optimizing brain development for higher fluid intelligence, while also influencing behavioral traits that happen to promote success.
So the genes aren't just boosting your ability to solve matrix puzzles.
Right. They might also be subtly wiring you for higher resilience, better emotional regulation, or an increased capacity to navigate complex social hierarchies in a corporate setting. The cognitive horsepower and the behavioral toolkit are blooming from the same genetic root.
Okay, and the second pathway is mediated pleiotropy, which feels a bit more straightforward in a causal sense to me.
Yeah, under mediated pleiotropy, the genes directly enhance cognitive ability, establishing a higher IQ. That intelligence then acts as an incredibly effective tool that causally unlocks subsequent doors.
Like a skeleton key.
Exactly. Your fluid reasoning makes you exceptionally good at processing complex information, which allows you to excel in university.
And then that academic performance secures you a specialized degree, which directly qualifies you for a higher-paying, prestigious occupation.
Precisely. The genes cause the intelligence, and the intelligence acts as the skeleton key for upward social mobility.
The researchers do emphasize that these two mechanisms are likely operating simultaneously, but I think we need to be incredibly precise about what this means regarding genetic value, because there is no isolated sequence of DNA that codes for becoming a financial analyst or a surgeon.
Oh, absolutely not. Nature has no concept of a stockbroker or a socioeconomic index. There are no genes specifically designed for wealth accumulation.
Right.
Human intelligence and the behavioral traits bundled with it through pleiotropy, they just happen to be fiercely rewarded in our current highly complex industrialized economy.
So it's context dependent.
Entirely. If human society suddenly collapsed and reorganized into a structure that exclusively rewarded physical endurance or aggressive territoriality, the genetic pathways leading to high status would completely rewrite themselves overnight. We are just measuring how specific biological traits interface with the arbitrary economic rules of the 21st century.
And bringing this data to the macro level inevitably intersects with social policy. The paper explicitly points out that political decision-making often treats the population as a uniform mean value, right?
It does.
Like a blank slate where everyone is assumed to be equally malleable to systemic interventions.
Yeah, and the study observes that treating the population as a uniform blank slate ignores the reality of genetic variance. This biological friction helps explain why massive universal societal distribution programs, such as providing free higher education or equalizing public schooling facilities, haven't noticeably reversed inequality in the labor market.
Because if the variance in occupational outcomes is primarily driven by individual genetic differences in cognitive ability, simply leveling the environmental playing field isn't going to result in equal outcomes.
Right.
Pushing that logic to its extreme, if you somehow perfectly equalize the environment for every single citizen, the remaining differences in their success would be 100% genetic.
That's the math. And the paper suggests that recognizing these biological influences should prompt a reevaluation of how we design support systems.
And to be clear, acknowledging genetic variance isn't an argument against social policy, is it?
No, not at all. It is just an observation that uniform, one-size-fits-all solutions will consistently fail to close outcome gaps if they ignore the underlying biological diversity of the population. It points toward needing highly individualized frameworks rather than broad, homogeneous interventions.
We always have to pressure test the boundaries of these studies, though. Taking this data set as the final word on human achievement would give a pretty distorted, fatalistic view of career mobility.
Oh, for sure.
There are severe limitations to this methodology that we really need to unpack, starting with the timeline.
Yeah, the longitudinal window is only 4 years. Tracking individuals from 23 to 27 captures that turbulent entry into the labor market. But 27 is arguably way too early to measure ultimate socioeconomic status.
Yeah, most individuals don't reach their peak earning potential or highest occupational prestige until their 40s or 50s.
Exactly. A longer tracking period spanning several decades might reveal a shifting dynamic between genetic influence and accumulating environmental capital.
There's also the issue of missing data within the twin life panels.
That's true. A non-trivial segment of the participants had missing data points, particularly regarding occupational prestige.
Does that skew the results?
Well, attrition analyses generally indicate the dropout in this data set is random. But missing data inherently forces the statistical models to rely on a degree of estimation.
Which introduces uncertainty.
Yes. Furthermore, the study didn't directly control for parental socioeconomic status. The common environment factor absorbs some of this variance, but explicitly controlling for parental wealth and education is typically required to fully disentangle these effects.
And the most glaring limitation is the ACE model itself, right? The framework dividing everything into additive genetics, common environment, and unique environment. It's a massive oversimplification of human biology.
It ruthlessly simplifies incredibly complex biological reality. The model entirely ignores epistasis and gene-environment interactions.
Remind us what epistasis is.
Epistasis is a phenomenon where the effect of one gene is entirely dependent on the presence of one or more modifier genes. You can think of the genome like a massive biological circuit board.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
If a master switch higher up in the circuit is flipped off, possessing all the right genes further down the line might yield zero effect. The ACE model treats genetics as purely additive, so it ignores all these intricate dependencies.
It also leaves out passive gene-environment correlations, doesn't it? Where the parents provide both the genes and the environment that fosters those genes, making it nearly impossible to fully separate the two in a natural setting.
Right. But the author acknowledges these constraints, noting that the objective was to utilize a robust, standardized model to clearly communicate the overarching biological linkages.
So the goal was to prove the primary flow of variants, not to map every microscopic interaction on the genetic circuit board.
Exactly.
So distilling all the math, the models, and the biological mechanics down, the core truth you should take away is this. Individual cognitive ability is a highly reliable predictor of your future socioeconomic status. And when we track that connection over time, the link between your fluid intelligence and your career success is overwhelmingly driven by overlapping genetics rather than the shared environment you grew up in.
Yep. The fundamental bridge between how you process the world and where you ultimately end up in it is deeply rooted in your biology.
It requires us to abandon the simplistic notion that our minds are completely distinct from our material success.
It really does. Our biological inheritance plays a continuous unfolding role, constantly interacting with our environment to shape the socioeconomic destinations we eventually reach.
Which brings me to a final thought for you to chew on. What does this mean for how we design a truly equitable society if the very cognitive tools required to achieve socioeconomic success are partially written in our genetic code?
That's the big question.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
We start with the same blank page, different ink in our veins. A quiet score at 23, then life rearranges names. 4 years, bright screens, late nights, trying to make it align. But some invisible fingerprints keep showing up in the design. It's not just where you land, it's how you're wired to climb. Not only doors you're given, but the hands inside your mind. So when the numbers link, don't call it simple fate. Listen close, there's more than chance in what we calibrate. It's in the overlap, the echo in the code. The same deep signal on a different road. IQ the status, time moves on. The genes hum loud where the patterns spawn. We can change the world. Rules that we have to know. What's in the threads that pull us forward slow? Twin shadows in the data set, walking side by side. Fluid thoughts, education steps, the work we try to ride. The tide looks strong, up above three, like a line that won't let go. And the loudest part of why it holds is something we don't show. So don't confuse the map for the traveler's heart. Environment matters, but it's not the whole chart. If we build a fair ladder, we should measure every rung. Name the hidden curtains and redesign what's left undone. It's in the overlap, the echo in the code. The same deep signal on a different road.